Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Way it's going to go. Let's go ahead and check the temperature of our future, where we really are with some guys who got question marks hanging over them in the final game before the All-Star break. And then there's a week to tinker. Now, I got a couple ideas of what tinkering should be done in the upcoming week for the Golden State Warriors. Last night, man, I mean, they were the Elmer Fudds. They were missing bunnies. There were so many right there shots that I can't believe went down. One particular segment stands out more than the most. Nash, if you will, the segment last night where they basically missed four shots in a row, including a top of the key straight on three from Steph. Here's how it sounded with Tim Roy on 95.7 The Game. Huge sequence last night.
Minute 20 to go. A bucket here would be huge. Curry gets a screen from Draymond, so they get Curry on Hood again. Now a screen by Wiggins. They double-team Curry, bounce pass to Wiggins, rotes over to Draymond, right corner, Bazemore lets it fly, hit the side of the board, rebound, Curry, no good, tipped by Wiggins. Wiggins goes for the rebound, bats it out to Curry, straight on for three, no good, tip no good, loose ball goes to Portland.
Now, that's really where the game was lost. It's easy to see what happened. Draymond and Dame on that bang-bang charge call, whether it was, whether it wasn't, to be debated. It was very, very close. Either way, Draymond tried to finish the game like the Kool-Aid man coming into your living room. Not a lot of grace there, but it was the right play for him to make. Unfortunately, it just did not go the Warriors' way. Everyone was left talking about the Draymond charge, but it really was right there. If you're looking for the anatomy, where did the loss come from? Fellas, it feels like that was the sequence right there.
Yeah, the charge call, I mean, that one's a coin flip, but you know, the game was there to be had earlier, and it's interesting that both teams shot poorly, but the one thing that I took away from it is that the Warriors committed 24 fouls and sent them to the line 26 times, of which they made 22. There's a place where the game was lost, too. I mean, and I mention that because Steve Kerr is on them constantly about how they foul and how often they foul, and that was one of the places where, you know, you just go, no, I mean, they got more shots off, they had more rebounds, but they basically marched Portland to the line a ton of times, and Portland's a pretty good free throw shooting team.
It felt like the Blazers were in the bonus for the whole second half. And beyond that, in the early going, when they were really controlling the game, and that continued even after the 10-0 start for a little bit, they just then started turning the ball over. And that's what it was to me. I think if we had to identify a sequence down the stretch, Damon, you're right. It's that, like, you're up three in the final minute. How do you not convert one of your four scoring opportunities on the same possession? You just have to if you want to win that basketball game. But at the same time, the way I look at it is you might not have had a close game had you been sound with the ball and played defense without fouling in the first three quarters.
It's funny. It's really easy to say, well, just start the score at 100 and let teams play 2 minutes, and that's where it's decided. There are so many little things that happen throughout the game that if you got up from your couch and you missed that 3-minute stretch in what felt like throwaway third quarter time, yeah, it all gets decided right there, too. When you have that narrow a margin for a loss, there's so many things that had they gone your way, it changes the night. Now, the Warriors, like I said, not a lot of time to feel bad about it. And certainly, if the mantra was going to be, get on a little bit of a winning streak going into the All-Star break to feel good about it, it's going to be really hard to do that tonight without Steph, without Draymond in Phoenix. Of course, we are going to get you out to Warriors Live around 5:30 tonight. Like I said, Anthony Slater is going to be joining us. Ryan McDonough is going to be joining us. A Thinking Man's Thursday coming up a little bit later on. Here on 95.7 The Game, I still don't know. Here's something I got to think about. How did Jordan Poole get a DNP last night? That to me... we need an answer there. I don't demand an awful lot from Steve Kerr or Bob Meyer interviews, but I would like an answer. Why did that happen last night? So that
why call him up from the place where he was playing a lot and playing well if he wasn't going to play here?
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't make sense whether you're looking at it coming or going. It really doesn't. So developing young talent, maybe not this organization's strong suit. Or maybe it's just one night and we'll see him tonight. And, well, look at it this way. There's no choice but to see him tonight. So maybe that's the silver lining on the who isn't playing tonight cloud. But that's about it. More on weak sauce NBA texts and ejections. And I have a multi-million dollar idea that I would be willing to sell the NBA for just $1 million. It's $1 million idea. I can help fix this league today. I am a solutions-based host, not just a complainer. So I will have a solution a little bit later on, and then the two of you can judge it harshly, and we will debate. 888-957-9570. That is our number. We got a good one for you today. What if I told you Major League Baseball's opening day was about a month away, and we still don't know whether or not we're playing with the National League or American League rulebook or who gets ghost runners or anything? It's a little odd that we would be this close to the start of a baseball season without a baseball rule book. But here we go. This is good. We got a great show for you this afternoon. Like I said, Anthony Slater, Ryan McDonough, we're going to think, and we invite you in for Warrior midseason grades. We will let you know what grading we will be asking you to do a little bit later on. In the meantime, Warriors are back at it tonight in Phoenix. JD and Kove, get you ready with Warriors Live at 5:30. Tip-off is at 7 o'clock. Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky, good to have you here on 95.7 The Game.
Draymond Green gets it up top. Waits, hand off to Curry. Curry stumbles with the drive, gets the ball back, turns, shovel to Draymond. Draymond pump fakes, takes it all the way to the rim, goes up, no good. They're going to wipe it away. It's an offensive foul. Draymond says, count the bucket.
He's saying he wants to review this, too, I believe.
I thought he was sliding in, but, you know, some of them go your way, some don't.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
That might have sounded a little cavalier from Draymond, but that's the perfect way to explain it, man. Some are going to go your way in that call, some are not. And one that probably isn't is one that Draymond Green is a part of as the offender, where it's Damian Lillard in his own gym in a game-deciding moment. It feels like a lot of the benefit of the doubt is going to go towards Lillard there instead of Draymond from just about any official in almost any situation. But that really was, it was very, very close. And I am Mr. Blocker Charge. I love to debate it. And I'll tell you that that's about as close of a coin flip call as you can ask for. They went to the tape. They were right to go to the tape. They were right to review it. And was Dame still sliding that foot? Absolutely he was. Had Draymond initiated the leap before the... Yeah, I mean, it could have gone either way. It's never going to go Draymond's way in Dame's gym. There you go. I think that sums it up about as realistically as anything in that moment. No, the ultimate badass officiating decision would have been no call. But there isn't an official in this league who's got the guts to give that a no call.
Well, that's got to be called one way or the other. I mean, because there's more than sufficient contact. So you get paid to make tough calls. That's a tough call either way. The only thing I would ask, and I don't know the answer to this because I don't think anybody does, is there as much of a home court advantage when there's nobody in the building? Because I would think that if you had an official who was intimidated by location, it would be because there'd be 19,000 people screaming at him. When there are zero people screaming at you, I wonder if that still exists.
Maybe you feel like you got to overcompensate for that or something. I don't know.
Maybe that was just his best judgment on that call.
Right, and it's hard to argue that he was wrong. I mean, it was that close. It was that close. Of course Warriors fans would have liked to have seen it their way. It was that close. It really was.
And I think we're relatively sure that if it was egregiously wrong, that Draymond Green would have found a way to make his feelings further known. You know, I mean, I guess it's to his credit that, you know, given what happened last week, that he's more circumspect about losing it, you know, especially at a critical time of the game. But I think if that was egregiously wrong by NBA standards, I think he would have said more than he did. I think he knows it was a bang bang play and it could have gone either way.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's right. I don't think he even lost it at the time. You know, it's a tough call, but I'm with you. You know, even if there is a slant towards Damian Lillard, once they replay it, like if it had been really wrong, they'd have flipped it. So I think it's just one of those where he called it the way he saw it in the moment, and once that happens, it's too close to change it.
Yeah, it was one of those you need indisputable visual evidence and you can't overturn without
that. And I'm
that,
fine
really.
With that on a play like that, right? I mean, that's not – to me, those are not really the plays replay is for. Replay is for the ones that are clearly wrong that we should be able to take care of in 30 seconds.
Right. Was that ball out of bounds? Yes or no? Let's check that out. That's what it's there for.
Yeah, or even a block charge that's egregiously called. You know, I'm fine with a review that's like, oh, man, we blew that one. All right, fixed it. We're done.
Last night, of course, Steve Kerr asked about this in the postgame press conference, and he said he thought it was, and by the way, Steve Kerr, in case you didn't know, is also the head coach of the Golden State Warriors. He thought it should have gone.
Did we need to ID him?
Breaking news. Steve Kerr has a bias in his opinion about that call built into him. Here's what he had to say afterwards.
He hit a huge shot, obviously, you know, deep shot. I was, you know, more upset a couple minutes earlier. We let him come off a screen cleanly. We had kept him under wraps most of the game. And then with about, I think, 2 to 3 minutes left, we let him come off clean at the top of the key for a wide open three. That was the big shot that bothered me. The last one didn't bother me because he came up and hit a deep one, and, you know, that's what he does. But we gave him a little rhythm by not being up to touch and on the one with a couple minutes left, and that was disappointing. You know, as far as the block charge, it looked like a block to me. I thought he was sliding underneath, but, you know, the referee's got to look at it, and they made the call.
I'll tell you what was the deciding factor in that is even though Dame Lillard's right foot was still sliding underneath him, he was still. The foot hadn't been planted, but he was totally still and vertical, and Draymond, again, was basically Bozacking him at that point right up in his grill. So it was
Yeah, yes. I mean, when the contact happened, he was still. The letter of the law is that you have to be still when the guy takes off. And that probably wasn't true, but it is so hard to get an official or anybody to be able to look in two places at once. That's why it's a tough call, because you're looking basically at what is going to be torso contact, and you're also trying to look at somebody's feet. And it's basically almost impossible to do both. So they usually just go by, was he stationary when the contact happened or close enough?
Yeah, that's what happens. I just, you know, as we're sort of saying, there's just belaboring that call is a waste of everybody's time, because it's a call that, as you've pointed out, Damon, is pretty much never going in your favor. It's a call that really, like, there's no definitive way to say it was a wrong call, even if it was borderline, could have gone your way. And it's a call that really should not have been in a position to determine the basketball game, because the Warriors had opportunity after opportunity earlier in the game. They had an entire game, essentially, where they were doing a good job of defending Damian Lillard to pull away from the Blazers, and because of their own mistakes, they failed to do that.
So let's absolutely then talk about the things that the Warriors did have more control over, and there is no aspect of a game that a team has more control over than who's playing and for how long. And last night, James Wiseman got 11 minutes. Now, he picked up four fouls in 11 minutes, and Enes Kanter was absolutely giving him a free lesson on how to play some NBA basketball. There were hands on his hips. There were hands that Kanter knew he could get away with because, like we were just saying, it's hard to have your eyes in two different places. All eyes follow the ball, which is a good time to push somebody in the hip a little bit when you're boxing out or looking for an offensive rebound, and Kanter came down with an awful lot of them. But 11 minutes for James Wiseman on a night where you're looking for some easier scoring options. I don't know if the Warriors really have an easier scoring option than figuring out how to get that guy to just throw down some jackhammer alley-oops. It feels like it's there for them, yet they're cautious to get into it. And that's something that Anthony Slater wrote about today. And look, when Anthony Slater writes about something, the fan base starts talking about it. And one of the things the fan base is absolutely talking about today is James Wiseman. Why isn't he more involved now? And what will it take to get him more involved? Again, nobody's angry. And I think we all know that he's a little bit behind the curve because he had COVID. He had the weirdest offseason of all time. He had missed time already in season with an injury that lingered a little bit longer than anyone thought it would. So there are all sorts of reasons to explain why he isn't. But there's so much talent. I need a little bit more. I need some explanation to explain why they're not looking for more when more is what they need. And it feels like he might be the guy to fit the bill to give it to him.
Well, last night, I think he didn't play much because Enes Kanter was using him, got him in foul trouble early. But over the last five or six games since he came back, I don't think he's playing with the same sort of verve or, I don't want to say inquisitiveness, but he seems to be more hesitant than before. And I don't know why that is, and maybe my view is wrong, but he doesn't seem to sort of have the same sort of inner confidence to do the things they ask him to do. He seems more hesitant, and because he seems more hesitant, he's not trusted with more. And I don't know if giving him a bunch at once is the best idea or not, because I don't know him well enough to make that call. But that's my sense, is that since he's come back, he hasn't been as, I don't want to say involved, because I think he's been involved, but I think it just, it's almost like he's unlearned some of the stuff they tried to give him earlier in the year.
That's interesting. I don't think I've seen that personally. I also don't think I've seen a guy that's made a lot of progress in the areas Ray's talking about. So maybe it's just that stagnance essentially functions as regression in this case. Look, if you looked at James Wiseman absent any context, I think you're forced to say, here is a big man who hasn't quite figured out how to defend without fouling at any level, who occasionally looks like he has hands made of brick, and who clearly is not maximizing the potential, not only in his body physically, but in the game that he already has. You know, he can already do things on the floor that he could be doing more and more correctly. I think all of those things are true absent context. The context is he's a 19-year-old kid with not only an incredibly small amount of professional experience, he's played 25 games, but also no college experience, basically a year layoff leading up to his NBA career, no training camp because he was sick with a virus that could still be causing lingering issues, and then, you know, missed another 10 games or whatever it is in the middle of the season. So, and I'm not saying either of you guys are doing this, but I think he's involved at the level he's involved because the Warriors both, A, believe that's about what he can handle, and B, believe that giving him more than he can handle does not serve his development any more than it serves the team today. Like, I don't think it's just about, well, you know, yeah, he'd probably get better development if he was playing more, but we got to win. I think they're playing him exactly as much as they think he can handle right now.
So we go into
the
a
other
week.
Thing,
go ahead, Ray.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was going to just get into the week that is in front of them in an area that I think is a place they should go digging in to bring out a little bit more offense in James Wiseman. But let's get what you were in here for first.
Well, I mean, it's interesting when you look at his minutes, they're not dramatically down, except last night when they yanked him quickly. But he's fouled out of two of his last five games, and that's largely defense. He played a lot against the Lakers, but that was largely a garbage time game from the get. So I guess what I'm looking at is the things that you saw that made you get excited about him are coming fewer and farther between. And Steve Kerr is in a weird place, not with Wiseman, but sort of in a macro way. It's that he's got to serve the development master and the make the playoffs master, because I don't know that Stephen Curry wants to sit through a rebuild. I think they have to basically try to get in the playoffs and try to get in them hard. And right now, James Wiseman is not helping them.
I'm not sure that's true.
Let's put it that way. I've probably overstated it. I don't think he's helping them as much as he was earlier. And I think last night might not be a great game to evaluate him on, because he got into trouble so quickly against a veteran big guy who could shove him around. But he didn't look like he was overmatched against Charlotte. He didn't look, particularly not impressive against Indiana. So I think it's partially that they're not seeing the same sort of angle of growth that they saw before. And also, I think he's finding out that the more you give somebody in terms of information to process, the harder it is to assimilate all of it. Because I think he's gone basically from 0 to 80, and he's finding out that the engine's kind of overheating a bit. Go ahead.
He's only played five games since he got back. As you said, he looked pretty darn good against Indy and Charlotte. I'd say he looked pretty darn good against the Knicks as well. Like, really, to me, what has happened here is he's had two bad games in a row, which, okay, bummer, but I think we'll all survive, and I don't really think it's a sign of anything bigger than a 19-year-old having two bad games in a row. He did that plenty, even like his best stretch of the season, which was right before he got hurt. There's a game in there against Phoenix where he played 18 minutes and went 2 of 9 for, 5 points and 6 rebounds, and just generally was not particularly good. So I think you're going to get those games, and we've gotten two in a row at a time when the Warriors could have used really good games, which is a bummer. But I don't really see the, engine overheating or a massive difference from when he was playing well. I just see a 19-year-old going through normal ups and downs.
Yeah, I'll tell you where my eyes go. It's to his hands in a half-court set. I hope he doesn't have stone hands. My God, I hope he's just, I haven't played a lot of basketball. NBA passes are official. They got more stink on them than the guys who passed me balls in high school. That's what I hope it is. But there is a problem with half-court, pretty simple, easy entry bounce passes that he mucks up with his own two hands.
Rebounding,
a little
more
often than I'd like to see, and the rebounding is a little, The one thing he is an athlete. He is an athlete through and through. He is more comfortable trying to throw down and finish an alley-oop than I think he is being back to the basket, trying to establish post position, looking for an entry pass, either high or low or bounce or chest. He's better on the move and he's better on the run. So I've got an idea for the upcoming All-Star Week off for him and Draymond that we'll get into in just a second. But the other thing that you guys were talking about, and Ray, you brought it, I don't know if you meant it as a negative or not. What I want to do is remove any and all taboo from the concept of James Wiseman fouled out of a basketball game. You want to talk about things that I could care less about? Let him foul out of every single basketball game the rest of this year before you go benching him in the name of,
well, he was struggling a little bit tonight.
Yeah, he's going to struggle. He's 19. I don't care about the fouls. Like, the fouling out for a 19-year-old center in this league should be looked at the way baseball has sort of readjusted its view on the major league strikeout. Oh, yeah. The shame that used to come with striking out. Now they're like, hey, you got to swing for the fences, so you're going to strike out more. So we don't care about striking out. I do not care about James Wiseman fouling out. I don't care about his fouling situation. Like, oh, well, Enes Kanter got him into trouble last night. Oh, let him foul him out of the game then. It's called learning on the job, which this year has to be. The Warriors aren't in a situation where they can go back in time and have a regular training camp and do it the right way and the smart way and the calm way and the prudent way. They got to do it this way. And this way is jamming that guy onto the court for more minutes, whether it works or not, because the future is him. Right there, him. He's the future. Not Kevon Looney, not frickin' Juan Toscano-Anderson, not Michael Mulder, who, God bless him, he tried to dunk on the entire city of Portland last night. He really did come through that lane like he had a Superman's cape on. I didn't know he had it in him. God bless.
Yeah, and he was up there. He just got bodied off it.
Yeah. he almost had one of the dunks of the year. He really did. But this is about James Wiseman and nothing else that is like a two-way contract, all the talk about Jordan Poole, Nico Mannion, all that stuff. It don't matter. Eric Paschal, God bless him, does not matter a lick compared to how much he matters. So play him. Play him, play him, play him, play him, play him. Play him if he's uncomfortable. Play him if he's feeling good. Play him if he's feeling bad. But play him. He's a second overall pick in the frickin' draft.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are some limits to that. But generally speaking, that's right. There is too much invested in the long term represented by James Wiseman, not to give him a little more rope, I would say. And, you know, look, we may see that. Again, he's 5 games back from a 10-game injury. So I understand the desire to be careful, and I understand the desire not to overexpose him if he's really struggling. But, yeah, if you got to foul out 20 times in 30 games, I have no problem with that.
Well, the reason why I bring up the fouling stats is because, one, it's something that Kerr thinks is important. And two, most of those fouls are him getting to a spotlight or, you know, not seeing a rotation in time. And those are things that they've been sort of grinding on him. And I think Anthony Slater made the point in his piece today about his confidence starting to wane a bit. And maybe what they see, and we can ask him later when he comes on, maybe what they see is the more you give him that he doesn't succeed, the worse it gets rather than the better it gets. I mean, I'm operating on the theory that they're gaining nothing by pulling him out of a game after 11 minutes unless they see something so egregious about the way he's absorbing things that it's going to cause not just short-term but sort of longer-term damage where they have to rebuild that confidence more. I mean,
yeah.
They may still be babying him some, but I also think that in a game when you're basically truly overmatched and you have as little sort of resume as he does, maybe there's a value in, on occasion, sitting and watching.
Yeah, and especially with a guy like Kanter. That's why last night is not, you know, a very egregious example in my eyes, given that he was picking up fouls so fast. And not just that, but Kanter was abusing him for offensive rebounds, for buckets. It just wasn't I'm not sure what more there was to be gained by continuing to subject him to that. But in general, I do think a longer leash and, you know, less concern about fouls might be warranted in his case. At least that's what I would think.
So,
yeah, I'm not fixating on the foul numbers as much as it is when you run into that many in the short amount of time that he plays. Like, he only played 18 minutes against Indiana and fouled out. That was another game in which he was getting worked. So it's not really the
actually, that was a game in which I thought he took a couple of absolutely brutal calls. So, you know, that's the other thing. It has varied to some extent how responsible I would say he's been for some of his rough foul nights.
So here we are. We're at the halfway point, and this is for the audience. 888-957-9570. I want to give some midterm grades. That's what you do when you get to the halfway point. Tonight is going to be a pop quiz of an unexpected game without Draymond or Curry. So we can almost
say... Pop quiz, hot shot.
Yeah, we can almost say that it's pretty much over right here. Like, we're at the halfway point right now. Tonight is, you know, cream in the coffee. Who knows what it's going to be. So what is your Warrior pass, fail, incomplete? That's all we're looking for. This is an easy grading system. What is a pass? What is a fail? And what is an incomplete? Your midterm grades for the Golden State Warriors. You can get as obvious or as clever with that as you want. What is a pass? What is a fail? What is an incomplete? You've been watching as much Warriors basketball as we have. You've been listening to it here on 95.7 The Game. It's time for your midterm report card. What do you got, Warriors fans? 888-957-9570. What is your pass? What is your fail? What's getting an incomplete? 888-957-9570. Anthony Slater, who wrote that great article about James Wiseman, joining us in about 19 minutes from right now. He's coming up at 3 o'clock. We're taking your calls, your report cards until then. Damon Radowinkolsky, brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full-service banking, no compromises. Our first Exergen temperature check of the show. It's 54 degrees in beautiful downtown San Francisco.
Damon Radowinkolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Oh, my God. It's like somebody sent the perfect text to get me to read it. Like, you, like outside of typing... Cheeseburgers, Bob Knight, don't you like puppies?
I was going to say, what does that have to do with the Hoosiers?
It says, Wiseman needs to seek out a veteran who attended the Pete Newell big man camp and work with him this summer. Ah, Bob Knight loved the Pete Newell big man camp. That's right up my alley right there, the Pete Newell big man camp. It's funny that you brought that up because I hope I am wrong about James Wiseman, that there is I would love to think I'm looking at the NBA's future unicorn. In many ways, I think I am. This guy is going to be incredible. Take the training wheels off. I want more. I think he can handle more. Again, what do I know? I'm just a guy talking on the radio. But I hope I'm right. I really, really do. His hands, though. His hands are concerning just a little bit. Just a little bit to the point where it got me thinking of an old Bob Knight UA Blob story. So UA Blob played for Bob Knight at Indiana. He was drafted in the NBA, but while he was a huge guy. He was 7'2" monster center from Germany, and basically he had terrible hands. He was a pretty good athlete for him at the time, but bad hands. No matter what, he just could not improve the damn hands to the point where when his wife had a baby. Bob Knight sent her a letter and said, congratulations to you and UA. Just promise me this. You'll never let him hold the kid over anything but the bed. And I hope that that's not James Wiseman. I really do. I hope that James Wiseman isn't the drop the baby, and that's going to restrict how much talent you think he's really going to have type of center. Early signs are a little concerning. Another person here on the text line asked this question. It's a decent question. Is there an NBA equivalent of the NFL's jugs machine, which is what just rockets bullet passes?
That's
into
so funny.
Guys? Yeah,
I had the same thought this morning. I was literally on a walk with my dog and my child this morning, and I had the thought, I wonder if there's an NBA jugs machine for James Wiseman. And like, you understand the concern, right? I'll say this. My concern in that respect is mitigated by the fact that he doesn't always have bad hands.
Right. It just gets like, contagious.
And there are times, and it's almost always either, as you said, catching a hot pass in the half court or going up for a rebound. Those are the times when all of a sudden it seems like he's just got oven mitts on. And I think that, to me, that tracks with a guy who's just still a little overexcited when the ball comes his way.
I think he's trying to make the play happen before it happens. It's a split-second thing, but I think he tries to catch it a little too fast. I think he tries to gather it in off the board a little too fast. And the fact that you said he doesn't always have bad hands tells you that it's not really a mechanical thing. I think it's just I got to get to this, and sometimes he acts quicker than he should. It sort of needs to be more of a Zen kind of thing where you just know when to get it. And
have to talk to Phil.
I think sometimes it comes and sometimes it goes.
Pretty good point here. Also coming in on the text line, 408, thank you very much, said, you know, who does Wiseman have to really work with and lean on that gives him sort of an athletic equal or a size equal for the Golden State Warriors? Ever since Marquese Chris broke his leg, he really doesn't have a big to battle against in practice, somebody to come in and give him at least a taste of other NBA center size. Any other center, I mean, Looney is, you know, an undersized guy. So
yeah, I mean, Chris isn't really that much bigger than Looney. He's a much better athlete, but
right.
The part, look,
Jaren Collins do it? Is what I'm saying. Is Jaren Collins out there in a penny working against them?
Probably, yes. And also, Jaren Collins is bigger than the vast majority of guys on most teams. Like, there's not a lot of guys in the league who are physically athletic matchups for James Wiseman. To me, that's less the issue than the defending straight up, which is usually against smaller players. You know, he gets a lot of his fouls bringing his hands down or jumping into smaller players around the rim. And then just getting used to being an NBA player, which, again, I know it gets tiresome because we're living day by day, but you're going to have to learn to live month by month or even year by year with James Wiseman because he still is 19.
Right.
Well, it's not so much that he's 19, although that's true. It's the fact that he's got so few games under his belt. And that's that's the thing.
Yeah, the whole thing.
We are basically telling people, have patience. And their version of patience is, well, we won 24 games in a row to start a season. How much patience do you want us to have?
So, again, does the NBA have a version of a jugs machine like the NFL has? Look, I don't know if the NBA does, but the Warriors do. And his name's Draymond Green. And this is where I think I can help the Warriors. They're probably not listening for me to me thinking that this is a guy who can help put wins on the season. I think I got an idea here, guys. I mean, tell me what this would hurt. All I want to see the Golden State Warriors do is rest up while they're enjoying their NBA All-Star break. Only Steph Curry has to put on the tools of ignorance and go to Atlanta. So this is the rest of the team getting all the time in the world to rest up and heal up and then go do a little bit of practice and a little bit of film study. And what I want more than anything, and you guys tell me if you think that this would be a good bit of time spent or not, I want Draymond Green and James Wiseman to start poring over Mike Krzyzewski, John Calipari, Roy Williams, and not just the North Carolina stuff. You can go over the old Kansas tape, too, if you want. But I want them to spend a night watching set alley-oop packages that are run by blue blood college programs because they know that they can go out and get 30 tonight just on athleticism alone. So those teams have half-court set alley-oop packages. Pick the 10, the 15 of them that you think would best apply to the NBA's level. Like, you can't get away with everything in the NBA that you get away with college, obviously. So pick the ones that you think are most translatable to the style that the Warriors play, to the opponents that the Warriors are going to be playing. Install 4 or 5 of these bad boys in and master them before you get back on the court for the second half. Pick the 4 or 5 you like the best. Go into the lab and come out with a whole bunch of pogo stick alley-oop plays that are set, easy to see. When the defense is doing this, boom, we go into that every single time. They're never looking for it. Just come back with that. Just come back with that. It feels like an easy way to get 12 points out of James Wiseman per month that you might not have had before, okay? And where are his hands great? Above his head, throwing down dunks. Where are his hands bad? Back to the basket, looking for post position. Get that kid running like a gazelle. Lob City, baby. Draymond, Lob City. Here we go. It's time.
I'd be surprised if they don't already have packages for that, if that's the right term.
We know they do. We see it a lot, right? I mean, we already see that a lot.
I don't think they're short on plays.
Yeah, I think that the Wiseman issue, and I hesitate to use the word issue because it sounds like it's worse than it is, but he just hasn't had enough reps playing. And now he's playing at the highest level there is. And I don't think it's practice prep that he needs. It's playing, but not in a way where you go, you're going to play 35 minutes no matter what. You know, it's one of those, and I think they're sort of doing it already, which is when you're doing well, we will keep you out there. And when you're not getting it, you're coming back here, and we're going to walk you through it another time. I think they're going to have to tell him some things 30 or 40 times until they see it done instinctively. Because it's not just about memorization at this level. It's about practical application. And you get that unless you are an extraordinarily gifted athlete by NBA standards to do that. And I think it's just – it's really not – you know, practice. I mean, you could find a huge guy to just knock him around in practice. You know, he might not, the guy might not be even a basketball player, but you could find it if it was just about, you know, learning how to take a beating and give one back. It's really about the more subtle stuff. And the more subtle stuff is not, you know, Draymond in the lab for 4 hours a day. I think it's what you do when you play against a bunch of different guys a bunch of different times. And Matt is right. 25 games is not a small sample size. It's not a sample size at all. You know, he's not going to be what people are expecting him to be, you know, this year. I mean, next year is when you want to see, okay, how much better are you than you were last year? This might be a 3-year project because he's being asked to do more things than most big guys are asked to do. With less of a background for it. And I think, you know, you're just going to have to grit your teeth and, you know, just sort of bull your way through all of his growing pains, because all of his growing pains are going to be right there in front of you while you're sitting on your couch. And he's going to be frustrating as hell at times. But I think that's the only way to get this done. It's just you try to play him as much as you can against different guys with different looks. I mean, there aren't many guys like Enes Kanter. You know, and when they play Denver, there aren't many guys like Nikola Jokic. You know, it just he has to face a whole bunch of different guys with a whole bunch of different skill sets, and he's got to learn all of them.
Well, how to unlock more of James Wiseman? That's exactly what Anthony Slater was writing about today in The Athletic, and it's time to say hello to Anthony as we welcome everyone to your 3 o'clock hour.
You should probably be ashamed to have to admit this, but you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station.
Our man Anthony Slater, after a rough one last night, after an interesting setup going into tonight, it's great to have you on, Anthony. Thanks for joining us here. What's going on, man?
How are you guys?
We're doing pretty well. A couple questions about last night, and it's not about the charge, because charges happens and basketball happens. What a team can control is minutes, and James Wiseman only played 11. Jordan Poole played 0. I'm frustrated with both of those numbers. Tell me why you think they came that way.
They're trying to chase down a win, and their belief is James Wiseman's not necessarily helping get the win as much as Kevon Looney starting, Eric Paschal getting some small ball with a more comfortable second unit, and even Juan Toscano-Anderson kind of, you know, pushing Draymond Green to the five. So they went after that win. Now, you know, you zoom out and you're like, why are you playing your number 2 overall pick 11 minutes? And that's where I think, as we look towards the rest of the season, particularly tonight, I mean, I think we all know James Wiseman's going to either get 25 minutes tonight or he's going to foul out before he gets 25 minutes tonight just because of the situation. But I think as you move into the second half, I think you're going to start to more regularly see James Wiseman, you know, getting at least 20.
Is there one unifying theme in his, you know, shortcomings, or is it just a different thing every night? Like last night, it looked like, you know, he just got Enes Kanter'd, and other nights he looks comfortable. I mean, is it just a different thing every night, which is why it's so hard to detect sort of long-term progress?
Well, it's defense. I mean, however you want to, you know, qualify it on that night. I mean, like you said, it's different defensive responsibilities that he fails at. You know, last night it's like you just got to keep Enes Kanter off the glass, and he gets out leveraged a couple times versus the man once. Some nights it's, you know, you have to play the pick and roll a certain way, and Kevon Looney's just better either in switch coverage, or he's just, you know, not going to jump at a pump fake, or he's going to guard Domantas Sabonis better in the post. Like, it's, they're just a better defensive team. You know, all the metrics show it when Looney's on the court instead of Wiseman. Now, you flip it, like, Wiseman's just a better offensive player. Now, it can be more awkward at times because he's trying to discover what he is. He kind of wants a bit more, you know, post touches and responsibility. Sometimes he takes the long jumpers that he shouldn't. But the reality is, I mean, James Wiseman's had games this season where he scored 25 points in, like, what, 20 minutes? Kevon Looney's career high is 15 points. How many guys on this team can score 25 points off the bench? Him, Pascal can have big nights in the league. If we're including the starters like Wiggins and Oubre, obviously can do that. But, you know, he has an offensive skill set that can help a team that is currently ranked 21st in the league in offense. And not only that, they can grow him into a guy. I mean, the goal should be to grow him into a guy that can help you win on both ends, but also provides an offensive punch at the center spot that you'll just never be able to get from Kevon Looney or Marquese Chriss or, you know, name most of your centers. I mean, he has an offensive upside that changes the dynamic for this franchise the next half decade, and they need to try to speed up the process to get there.
Given that need for a sped-up process, do you think in sort of their perfect world, in their minds, the Warriors front office would like to see him start to play consistently and get his way back into the starting lineup by the end of the year and sort of go forward with him as the starter? Or do you think having him on the bench is sort of a, this is best for his long-term development, so that's where he's going to be for now?
I think he'll be starting at some point. I think that, you know, I floated the idea of him, like, being given more responsibility in the second unit, potentially Jordan Poole, who Damon mentioned earlier, who we're going to see tonight and in the second half. I would be a proponent of seeing him more, you know, because they need to figure out if Jordan Poole is, you know, what we saw in the G League, can he be some version of that in small bursts in the NBA? And I think that would help Wiseman. He wants to, you know, he likes playing with more of a pick-and-roll playmaker like a Jordan Poole. But also, you know, James Wiseman's got to be their starter. Unless he's part of a package for a star this summer, he will be their starting center on opening night next season. So the best, you know, as good as you can get him, particularly in lineups that include Steph and Draymond, you need to give him more reps in that. Now, he was, remember before he got hurt, he had that like 5-game stretch where he moved to the bench.
Yep.
He seemed like he was kind of gaining some rhythm and some confidence there, playing well. But ever since he's gotten back, he's, number one, seems like he's regressed. He's not playing as well as he was about 6 weeks ago. And number two, he's losing confidence. And I don't know if a move to the starting lineup, you know, helps the confidence, or you just say, however you get it to him, you get him 20, 25 minutes a night, but they need to inject some confidence into him. Every time he gets pulled now, whatever you call it, shoulder slumping, sulking on the bench. But, you know, he's a perfectionist. He's too hard on himself, but they need to figure out a way to coach that out of him.
Yeah, get the hang dog out of there. My last question about James Wiseman is simply this. Should I be, are they at all concerned about his hands?
Yeah, for sure. Now, what's odd, you know, and I've, you know, we've had plenty of discussions about this, written articles, everything. It's usually when you think about the centers with fumbly hands, it's stiff.